Hey guys, Abel here, back with another video. First of all, don't forget that Messi is the GOAT. So in today's video, I would like to talk about training minimalism. In part, this is going to be a response video of sorts to a bunch of the discussions that been going on YouTube lately. There is this really cool new wave of natural lifters in the lifting community that are after the goal of resurrecting the respect that bodybuilding or hypertrophy training deserves. You don't need to call it bodybuilding. I'm just talking about having the goal of getting bigger, more aesthetic, more muscular. And these people are talking about how this is not just a side effect of getting stronger. Like, no, you can pursue getting bigger. That is a serious goal. And as such, you should treat it with respect. It's not just something that like, okay, pursue this other thing, like getting stronger or becoming a good powerlifter. It's not meant for getting more muscular, but come on, it's such a silly little goal. Just pursue this other thing that's gonna take care of this as well. No, like we should take this seriously. There's a method to the madness. And so as part of these discussions, I've heard dialogues about training minimalism. And as you might expect, they are not a huge fan of this whole idea. Minimalist training, no. Like, if you have a goal that you're serious about and you're passionate about, then you're not gonna be approaching it like a minimalist. You're gonna be doing what it takes. And so this is what I wanna talk about. So first of all, I would like to talk about the concept of minimalist training in a more general sense. What does it actually mean? And I think this is important because I think it will mean different things to different people. I intentionally didn't go to any kind of dictionary and look up definitions because I think what matters is what people actually mean when they say these things. And I don't really think that training minimalism or minimalist training practices, I don't think that this has any kind of widely agreed upon definition. So I'm just going to tell you what it means to me. And I'm also going to tell you what I think it shouldn't mean. And I'm going to be discussing some of the not so ideal implementations of this training practice. What training minimalism means to me is a degree of pragmatism when it comes to your training approach, being very practical and also being highly objective, basically evaluating what needs to be done and doing just that and not more out of any sort of fear that you might not be doing enough or not having this sort of, I'll be doing this, just in case, because you're rational enough to where you say like, okay, but realistically, is it likely that this just in case scenario is actually the case? Well, if not, then no, I'm not gonna be doing more. I'm gonna be doing what is actually required. No more and no less. Of course, I know that you can be a lot of these things. So you can be pragmatic and practical and objective and not be a minimalist. But I would say that in order to be a good minimalist, so some form of training minimalism that I can actually get behind, you do need to be those things. For this reason, I would say that training minimalism is actually something that resonates with me quite a bit, on some levels at least. That's not the way I train, but the mentality that these good training minimalists have is something that's quite impressive to me. Maybe it's because this was always something that I struggled with in my life. I've always been a person who had to really fight himself to not be driven by emotions and impulses. And so when I see someone who can be highly objective about things and not be driven by fear, actually, that's another thing that's really critical, I think, in order to be a training minimalist, is that you're not driven by the fear of missing out, essentially. I could also say that in order to be a good training minimalist, so once again, someone who is implementing this philosophy correctly or putting it into practice correctly, you need to not be driven by fear. So I think that that might be the most accurate way of describing all of this. Non-minimalist trainees, they might not be driven by fear necessarily, but often they are. I should actually just use we. I definitely do a lot of things in my training, which are basically insurance policies. And I'm insuring myself against scenarios which are, to be honest, not very likely. But I would rather overshoot things. I would rather do a bit too much than having regrets that I did too little. A lot of my training decisions, at least for my own personal training practices, are driven by this sort of emotion. Training minimalists don't have that. For this reason, actually, this resonates with me quite a bit, or I should say I admire these people quite a lot who can really implement this sort of training philosophy correctly. Probably because I've always been a person who had to fight his own impulses and fight his tendencies to be driven by emotions and fear a lot of the time. This has been my life story. Basically, since it's a big challenge for me, people who can actually pull this off, I greatly admire. Now, to narrow this down a little bit more, I would say that there are good reasons and bad reasons to do minimalist trainee stuff in the gym. You're not necessarily a training minimalist, but you might be doing stuff that minimalist trainees might do or what people would think that they would do generally. What are some good reasons to be a training minimalist or to do some of their stuff in the gym? I would say that one reason could be, and there's nothing wrong with that, is that you just don't enjoy training very much. You're not super passionate about this. This whole lifting, hypertrophy training thing is just a means to an end. You want to be jacked. You want bigger arms and bigger chest and whatever. If you could not get that from training, you would never ever lift. People like me, we at least claim that we would. Never been actually tested in the real world. But there are people who, you know, like if you ask them, they will tell you that, you know, for the past 5 years, I've made zero progress. And I'm aware of that. I'm not deluding myself that I made progress. No, like I maxed out. I reached my genetic ceiling. Whether they are correct or not, it doesn't matter. They are okay with that fact. And they're also okay with the fact that at least in their minds, they're not going to make progress going forward either, but they still keep doing it because they love it. So there are those people. A lot of people are not like that. And it's only about getting certain results, and that's why they lift. So they're not going to be spending any more time with this than what's absolutely necessary. I'm sure you have things like that in your own life as well. You actually dislike doing perhaps the activity itself, but you get certain benefits from it, so you do it. Some more politically correct reasons might include, of course, not having a lot of time. Yes, I know that a lot of people only say that they don't have time, but you know, it's all about priorities, and we all have the same 24 hours in a day. Okay, there are people who actually do not have the time to spend more time in the gym than, I don't know, an hour twice a week, or maybe 30 minutes three times a week. Like, there are actual people on this planet that are limited on time. So for them, of course, the non-essential stuff, like anything that is not really required to achieve their goals, those things need to be cut ruthlessly. Now, what are some bad reasons to be a training minimalist? Well, if I had to summarize it in one sentence, it would be being a training minimalist for the sake of being a training minimalist. There are some people for whom just the concept itself seems very cool. Like, it's just appealing to them. They also think oftentimes that not being a training minimalist, so doing the higher volume, like more exercises, greater variety, using machines, this sort of thing is lame and feminine. Like, that's what the stereotypical brainless meatheads are doing. I mentioned machines because oftentimes the purest, you know, barbells are superior to machines, and barbells are superior to dumbbells, but dumbbells are still superior to machines, which, don't get me wrong, it has some elements of truth, but not for the reasons that these people often think. These things often go hand in hand. So the whole minimalist training and the training purist mindset, those often are kind of intertwined. Often they are also just convinced that it's flat out better. They are often also fear-mongered that training volume, so like, okay, overtraining is a thing, but it's a rare thing. That's what a lot of us are aware of, that fact. Overreaching is a more real thing than overtraining, but it's still relatively hard to reach it. Like, you need to do quite a bit of volume. Well, in their minds, you know, anything more than like four sets a week is already like overtraining category. That would be like a more extreme version of all of this, but that does happen. Like, there are people that are really, really like beaten over the head by the overtraining fairy. That's a bad reason to be a training minimalist, because it's misinformed or just misguided and needs some reworking in people's heads. So no, you're not going to overtrain if you do just a moderate amount of volume, you know, like 6, even 10 sets, like most people can handle just fine. And no, you're probably not going to be doing better if you do very little training and not just moderate amounts of training. Generally speaking, the principle still stands that if A results in B, then more of A is going to result in more of B. So in this case, you know, if training results in getting bigger, then more training is going to result in getting even bigger. And then, of course, there is a point when there are diminishing returns, or you might even start to backslide. but that doesn't happen at three sets, you know, a week. Again, that's not all minimalist trainees, but some of them are. I would say actually a lot of them are. So these are bad reasons to be a minimalist trainee, because you're actually trying to achieve something and you're implementing this training style in the hopes of getting there faster, but you're actually shooting yourself in the foot. If you did the opposite of what you're doing, you would be doing better. The whole thing about doing more exercises and using machines and cables and, you know, like doing a push down, like that's what you're gonna do for your triceps. The whole thing about which style of training and how many lifts and what types of lifts are masculine and which ones will make you look like a wuss. While it's moronic and quite idiotic, I actually get it. And I know where the mindset is coming from because I've been there myself. You know, Martin Berkhan was like a god to me. And I actually still like his writing style a lot. I haven't consumed any of his content in a long time. But, you know, some of his articles were like really seminal pieces and they actually had a great influence on me. But the way he wrote about being a training minimalist and how people are just wasting their time doing all this fancy stuff in the gym, there's just something. I talked about this before on the channel, but there's just something that is at its core resonating with a man. Everybody likes the idea of not going in there and messing around with these cables and with these machines that are these modern constructions. But no, we are going for the raw heavy barbell and we are doing some heavy squats and we are crushing ourselves with just a couple of heavy sets under that really heavy weight. And then we are wiping our forehead and we are peace them out. And all these other people are just like doing their push downs and everything. Of course, there is something that is just deeply masculine and cool and about it. Of course, you know, even now, like I really do know better. And I think that machines are amazing. I think that cables are phenomenal. And in many, many cases, they beat the hell out of free weights. Barbells are, beyond the fact that they are very convenient and they are nicely microloadable and that you can find them in basically any gym. Beyond that, I think they are widely overrated. I should say wildly overrated. Despite that, man, if I could snap my fingers and make this super minimalistic, barbell-based, very low-volume training style centered around very heavy lifting the ideal training style for getting bigger, man, maybe I would still do it. Despite the fact that I actually like spending time in the gym, there is just that element to it that I already elaborated on. I cannot look past that. So I do get where the whole mindset is coming from, that this is cool and everything else is wussy. It just happens to be based on or founded on incorrect assumptions. Some concrete examples, like I sometimes see client applications where someone is describing their current training, which I'm always asking for when I'm working together with a new client. And sometimes I will see training splits which look something like Monday deadlift, 2 sets, bench press, 2 sets, and maybe chin-ups, 2 sets, that's it. And then Wednesday, I don't know, overhead press, 2 sets, bent over row, 2 sets, and maybe before that, squats, 2 sets. Or maybe it was just an upper body session, so okay, overhead press, bent over row, and I don't know, let's say tricep extensions, that's pushing it because that's, you know, isolation lift. Those 3 lifts, 2 sets, all of them, and then, you know, Friday would be squats, leg curls, calf raises, those 3, all of them 2 sets. You know, the difference between this setup that I illustrated here or another setup, which would be more like, I don't know, 6, 7 exercises, all of them like 3, 4 sets. The difference between those two is not that one is minimalistic and the other one isn't. It's that one of them is just idiotic. Like, this makes absolutely no sense. I just cannot see a scenario where legitimately you go down to the gym, you warm up for a deadlift, you have time for all of that, yet you leave after 6 total sets. Unless your wife called you in the middle of your workout and said, oh my God, like the water broke, like we need to go to the hospital. Well, probably not your wife will call you in that case. But unless something like that happens, I just cannot see that ever being justified, almost ever. And I know that, you know, people who do that kind of stuff are very often not people that are limited on time. No, it's people who have been convinced that this is the ideal way to train. Well, it's not. It's like 6 sets in a workout, unless you train at least like 7 days a week, but really like some of those days better be 2 a days. I just really have a hard time picturing a scenario where that would indeed be your best course of action. Another example, one time I was on summer vacation, so I was still in college. I had all the time in the world at my hands and more. I loved training. I was still fairly fresh to the whole lifting game. I was counting the seconds until I could finally train again, because that was the high point of my week when I could step into the gym. Yet I was doing something like this, like 6 to 8 sets per workout. My total weekly set volume was something like 18 sets or something like that. Why? Because I was convinced that this is the best way to train. And if you do more, that's purely a waste of time. In fact, you also look like an idiot for doing it. You are an idiot for doing it. And by the way, you're also a wuss. Like, are you even a man? Honestly, I'm the kind of person who does think about his regrets in life, unlike everybody that you hear in these inspirational interviews. But honestly, this is one of my bigger regrets. I wish I could go back in time and tell my whatever 20, 21-year-old self, like, dude, freaking go to the gym 7 days a week. You can go 15 times a week. Like, don't go past, let's say, this set volume per muscle group roughly, but you will be fine. Like, you don't need to wait like 3 more full days off until you can step foot in the gym again. So anyways, it would have been such a more fun summer with that. But yeah, so the point is there are just really, really silly reasons to be a training minimalist. There are very good ones, but it's important that you're well-informed at the very least. I could also say that we can sum up the differences of a good minimalist trainee, an intelligent minimalist trainee, and a good, let's just call it maximalist trainee. I know that's probably not an actual thing, maximalist, but let's just call it that. No, I actually think it is a thing, but it's not quite the opposite of a minimalist, but whatever. Is that a training minimalist is going to be looking at, okay, realistically, what is going to be required? I'm going to be doing that and no more than that, because why would I do more? If that's what's required, then that's what I'm going to be doing. And if, God forbid, I'm missing out on something, I could have gotten a little bit more. Realistically, what am I missing out on? By doing another exercise, another 2 sets, that's not going to move heaven and earth here. It's not going to produce a monumental difference. So we are good with only this much. A training maximalist has the mindset of, okay, I'm really passionate about this. I really want to make sure that what I'm doing is getting me the results that I'm after. So if it turns out that I worked more than what was required and I could have worked much less and I could have gotten the same results, I would rather live with that than live with the regret of, I could have gotten better results, but I didn't work hard enough, or not hard enough, but didn't do enough exercises, didn't do enough sets, what have you. So I'm going to be overshooting what is most probably absolutely essential. To be honest, I think a lot of us here, you watching the video, me as well, a lot of us have this kind of mindset. I don't have this dialogue with myself all the time, but like realistically, probably I'm doing some redundant sets for my delts, my arms, earlier on for my chest. Basically, if I have a priority muscle group, I'm gonna be erring on the side of overshooting it rather than undershooting it. So basically, for the remainder of this video, I'm gonna be giving you a short little blueprint on how to be a really, really good training minimalist. The kind of training minimalist that people like me that are not training minimalists will raise our heads to any day. I will say, okay, like, it's not my cup of tea, but I cannot with a straight face say that you're wrong for doing it this way. I actually think that what you're doing is very, very proper. Let's just put it that way, okay? So we're gonna get into that now. So the first thing I would like to say to you is that being a minimalist trainee, as I sort of explained before, should not have some code that you need to follow. It has no 10 commandments that thou shall never break, otherwise you're no longer a minimalist trainee. It's just about a general mindset that you have. So just because you're a minimalist trainee, it doesn't mean that you need to follow a low volume program. I don't even think that it necessarily means that you need to train only few days of the week, like 2 or 3 days of the week. In practice, it often ends up being the case, because either for the wrong or for the right reasons, but even that is not necessarily set in stone. It is also not set in stone that you need to be doing barbell basics, quote unquote, basic lifts. It is also not set in stone that you should not be doing single joint lifts. I think that you can be a minimalist trainee while doing a whole bunch of curls and tricep extensions, because once again, it's about the mindset. If that is what's required for your goals, and you do that, but no more than that, then in my mind, you're a minimalist trainee. Again, I'm not acting stupid here, not pretending to not understand. I know that in practice, a lot of people who call themselves minimalists will be training 3 days a week or less. Now, from this follows that if you're a minimalist trainee, but a smart one, if you're in the gym and you have the opportunity to perform a certain exercise on a regular basis, which could possibly, maybe not definitely, but very possibly aid you to get to your goals faster, if it doesn't get in the way of other things, if it costs you no extra time, and if it costs you no major extra energy to speak of, then I think not performing it is a mistake. I think that you need some strong justification to not do it. That justification could be that you really hate it, but then be honest with yourself. Are you really hating it, or you just made up your mind already? But if you get to squeeze in an exercise in between two sets of something that you're performing, and you're not losing time, and it's also not hindering your performance on this other lift that you were performing otherwise, then I think you should be taking advantage of these opportunities. Now, don't be random, of course, but if you have like a somewhat consistent routine, you will be able to pick up on these things. So for example, if you're doing squats, and you get the chance to squeeze in a set of bicep curls, for example, between two sets of squats, I don't see why you wouldn't do it, especially because on squats, you will probably be resting quite a bit, at least more than 1 or even 2 minutes. So probably you will have plenty of time to squeeze in a set of curls. And, you know, of course, have some common sense. You probably don't want to be fitting in bent over rows in between sets of squats, although you could, but then you will also have to rest longer. There are many examples like this, and the next point will actually be about this. But I think first of all, before we actually talk about the specifics and what sort of superset and giant set and whatever other time-saving and clever little strategies like this you can use, before all of that, I think it all begins with some acceptance and perhaps for some of you with some mindset shift that just because you're a minimalist, you can also take advantage of these low-hanging fruits and kind of like no-brainer easy wins. Why wouldn't you? I think that fits perfectly into the general picture of a smart minimalist trainee. Following the theme that being a minimalist trainee does not have a code and it doesn't even necessarily mean having to train with low volume or only being in the gym 2 days of the week, let's take a scenario which admittedly is going to be common, that you only have time to be in the gym, let's say 3 days of the week or 2 days of the week. In these scenarios, I think that the default approach is, like I said, okay, I'm going to be doing only 4, 5, maybe 6 sets, maybe even only 3 sets, and that's going to be for my whole body. This is a limitation that we can easily get away from. In fact, I think it would be a very unevolved thing to not think outside of the box a little bit, because who is to say that you need to train your whole body symmetrically or in a balanced way? Why not do very low volumes for muscle groups that you don't care about? And you could even train with high volumes for those muscle groups that you do care about. So let's take the typical guy, and I'm going to be using a female example as well in a second, but let's take a guy, typical scenario, cares about the chest and the arms and the delts, the back, somewhat, not as much because it's not a mirror muscle, right? Doesn't care about the lower body that much. Well, how about this? You do 3 to 6 sets for your quads, hamstrings, calves, and then you're doing 10 to 12 sets for your chest and arms and delts. And for the back, because you don't care about it as much, you're doing 6 to 9 sets. This is going to come back later, but I think it's worth categorizing different areas of your body by how much you care about them. Let's say you have muscle groups that are crucial, like that's a non-negotiable, like you really want to grow that one. Then maybe you have some muscle groups that you do care about, but it's just not priority number one. So there are some other muscle groups that you care about even more. So for me, for example, historically, this has been my back. I did want a great back. I definitely did. But my chest, my delts, those were just more important to me. So I always prioritize those slightly more. Then maybe you have some muscle groups that you know that you should care about, and you know that you're going to regret this a lot if you don't prioritize this now, but you just hate training. It is just a pain in the butt. For me, I would say that this has been my arms, historically. I never liked curling, particularly, as in to curl, not the sport curling, which I also don't like, by the way, but you know, it's just been something that I never really enjoyed. So whenever I could use some justification to skip it, I skipped it. So for these things, you know, once again, like probably a slightly different kind of strategy and approach to the amount of volume you're performing or how you're performing that amount of volume, it will be slightly different than for those muscle groups that you really do care about a lot. And then maybe you have some other muscle groups that are just a legitimate no, like I just do not want to train this. Or maybe we can actually divide this into further categories and say, okay, if I could, I would never freaking train this muscle group ever again. But I know that I should because I'm going to regret it if I don't. And those where, well, actually, I think I can get away with never training this muscle group again. For example, for me, that's my calves. Like, I don't particularly like training my calves. And luckily, I don't have to because that's just my genetic gift. On the other hand, my quads, I definitely don't enjoy training it that crazy much, but I know that I would regret it because my upper body is big enough at this point where chicken legs would look really, really weird and silly. So there are different kind of animals here that we are talking about. Within these animals, I would say that those muscle groups that are priority number one to you, you should be compromising on as little as possible. So don't skimp on the volume there. If you need to cut back somewhere, don't cut back there. So maybe with those ones, you want to preserve the volume for as long as possible. And only as a last resort do you cut back on the volume there. Then those where, okay, it's important, but not priority number one. Maybe air a little bit lower, but still within that range where you're really confident that this is in that optimal zone that's like widely agreed upon that this should be enough for most people. So let's say if I care about my chest the most, then I would be airing, I don't know, like in the 12 to 15 range, let's just say, if I'm really paranoid that otherwise I'm not going to grow it. Then if about my back, I wouldn't care as much, but I would still care about it quite a bit, then that would be in the 8 to 12 range, let's just say. And then let's say for my arms, which I should train, but it's a pain in the ass, I would be airing more so in the 6 to 9 range. So basically a range where, okay, like this for some people might only be enough as a maintenance dose. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of people only do this much and they're doing fine. So let's see if this works. And then for those muscle groups where you really, really wouldn't train them at all if you could, but you know that you will regret it if you don't train it, you can actually experiment with how little you can get away with. So maybe you can do 4 sets a week only, and you can still eke out some very, very slow growth. Give it a try. I mean, worst case scenario, it's not going to work. In that case, you can always do more later. I mean, it's not that hard to make up for some lost time. This is the time to be really experimenting with how minimalist you can get because you don't care about it that much anyway. And, you know, when it's a legitimate no and it's an okay no, like the calves in my case, like really, it doesn't really matter if I don't train it because it's good as it is. I guess just skip it. Why the hell not? In fact, I would also say that for periods of time, for a few months at a time even, in fact, I would also say that for periods of time, you know, a couple of months at a time even, if you really hate training a muscle group, but you know that in the long term you should train it, I mean, you can even skip it altogether, you know. I didn't train quads for a couple of months, like 3-4 months. Yeah, my quads shrank a little bit, but they came back already, like muscle memory and all of that stuff. Or air for some legitimate maintenance dose. So, you know, what I said about experimenting with what's the least that you can get away with and like still eke out some growth. I mean, if your goal is only maintenance, I mean, hell, try out 1 set per week. Maybe that's going to maintain it. And the thing is, even if it doesn't maintain it, at the very least, it's going to slow down the decay or the regression. So, yeah, I would say the world is your oyster with experimentation. Like, this is really the time to do it. I would say that another very important piece to becoming a successful minimalist trainee is having at least a very surface level understanding of muscle functional anatomy and just understanding, you know, from a bird's eye view, what types of movement patterns and exercises hit different muscle groups. And from there, you will also understand the overlap between different muscle groups. So, for example, what types of presses should you count at least to some degree as some quote-unquote indirect? My attention was called to the fact that this is a really bad term to use, but we will just go with that for now. Indirect or, my God, what's a better word for that? And from there, you will also get to understand the overlap between different exercises and different muscle groups. So probably most of you know that if you do some kind of a horizontal press, that's usually not just for the chest. It's also going to hit the front delts, but also going to hit the triceps. If you do a squat, that's not just quads and not just glutes even. To some extent, that's also going to be calves. Do you know why? Well, you know, look these things up. It's not super complicated, but it's going to help you a lot if you understand these things. And from there, you can actually make much better informed decisions over what exercises to cut out, like which ones are the redundant ones. Because some, pretty objectively, we can say that they are redundant. For instance, I see really no reason for most people, I would say, to perform something like a single arm cable reverse fly. Now, that's a really, really fine movement for the rear delts. But if you do a whole bunch of rows and all kinds of pull-down variations and chin-ups and whatever, do you really need that? I mean, your rear delts are getting so much stimulation. It's almost like a waste of space. There is nothing wrong with doing that exercise, but that's really a luxury exercise. Like if you really found nothing better to do with your time and energy, then sure, do it. And if you disagree, please elaborate. But before you do, if your argument is going to be that like my rear delts never popped until I started doing reverse flies, okay. But I'm saying I don't think that's most people. That's my opinion. That's my experience. So there are many other cases like this. For example, should you do a lower trap isolation exercise? Not that many of you would want to even, but that would be a highly redundant exercise in my opinion. Also, even as a woman who cares a lot about her glutes, do you need to do hip thrusts if you do, you know, 6 sets of hip hinges of some kind and like 10 sets of some kind of a squat pattern that week? I would argue that you don't. Like your glutes get a lot of really high quality stimulation. If you're short on time, even as someone who really wants to build the best glutes possible, even you might be better off actually spending the remainder of your time doing, I don't know, some shoulder work or something like that, because your glutes are on fire already from all that really high quality work. But yeah, if you really want to make the most out of this minimalist training experience, I would say educate yourself a little bit about not biomechanics, but muscle functional anatomy, and it's going to serve you really well. Another thing I would say is that let's say you're really short on time, and not only is it that you can only go to the gym 2, maybe 3 times a week, but you're also now really, really short on time. Before you start cutting down on volume, consider other alternatives. Like maybe there are other ways that you can save time. So maybe you can actually pair up exercises so you can find some really cool superset options. And here, don't just limit yourself to these antagonist paired sets. So, you know, antagonistic muscle groups. So, you know, a horizontal press, horizontal pull, vertical press, vertical pull. Those are great, but that's not the only option. Like I said, a squat and a bicep curl, a press and a bicep curl. These are really cool options. And it's also cool that these ones you can do even in a pretty busy commercial gym without being an asshole and taking up a whole bunch of equipment at once. Like you can even go to a chest press machine and just take a dumbbell with you. Like, is that big of a deal? I do agree that like if you take up like 3 machines in a busy gym, let's say at rush hour, that's not a very nice thing to do. Like be a bit more considerate. But taking a dumbbell, I mean, who are you bothering with? Or let's say you're doing squats, you can pair that up with a single arm overhead press. I mean, why not? Again, you take a dumbbell, you hold on to the rack with one arm, with the other, you press it overhead. You do that in between sets of squats. Why not? There are many, many options. Actually, I just mentioned now a couple that I do like. One that I'm particularly fond of, and I do that quite a bit, is when you're using a cable station, then a very easy thing that you can do is a set of bicep curls, let's say like a behind the back cable curl, supersetted with an overhead single arm tricep extension, or it can be even like bilateral. The only reason I said single arm is because then you don't even need to change the handle. And then the next one is a lateral raise. So it's 3 exercises that are basically completely independent of one another, like almost no overlap in the used muscle groups. And you can do circuits like that. You don't even really need to rest a lot between sets. So it's just, you know, bicep curl, tricep extension with very minimal rest, lateral raise after minimal rest, back to the bicep curl. I mean, you will be able to do, I don't know, 9 sets in total in a couple of minutes. instead of just standing there and resting like 2 minutes between sets of curls, just do other stuff in the meantime. And this is arguably the most convenient thing that you can arrange, because again, like the handle can be the same for all of these exercises. So that's a very convenient one I already mentioned, but if you can pair up a vertical press with a vertical pull or a horizontal press with a horizontal pull, do it. It depends sometimes on the arrangement of a squat rack, for example. Like in one gym that I'm using here, sometimes I actually can do a chin-up, even if I did a barbell overhead press before, because it's just how it's arranged. Like there is enough space. In another gym, there isn't. Same thing with horizontal pulls and presses. In one gym that I'm using, the rowing station and then a chest press machine is right next to each other. So like if the gym is pretty empty, I can actually pair those up. And then if someone comes, then I'm just going to move over to one of them and I'm going to finish my work there. If it was at the other end of the gym, then it would be a lot more difficult because, you know, I need to walk over. So that's a whole bunch of extra time in which someone can steal one piece of equipment or the other. Or, I mean, so they're not stealing it. If someone comes there, I'm going to be giving it to them. I'm not going to be like, hey, no, I'm using that one over there and that one as well. I'm not one of those. But at least I can like take away my towel from there or whatever. I would say that in general, I would say that when it's difficult to arrange these sort of superset options in your gym, consider pairing up free weights with machines, because that's often a lot easier to arrange. So like, for example, it might be very difficult to pair up two machines, but you can pair up an easy bar, which you can take with you to the machine and the machine, or a dumbbell and the machine. I would also say, by the way, if you're only going to be training 2 days of the week or 3 days of the week, 3 days a week is pretty decent, but 2 days a week, that's going to be rough, because you will really need to cram in a lot of exercises if you want to train like remotely your whole body. You will have to learn to be a bit more shameless about these things. So like I train basically 6-7 days a week, most weeks. So in my case, I can afford to be super, super duper polite. I'm not going to be hogging machines. I'm not going to be supersetting things, which could be an inconvenience to others. But if I trained 2 days of the week and that was my only chance to get in a workout, man, I would be the hog. Like I would be hogging everything everywhere. So I would say you need to strengthen your shamelessness muscle if you're going to be a true minimalist. Another thing, and this is very important, when you're in arguably non-ideal circumstances, so still we are at the example of someone who is, let's say, only lifting 2 days of the week, you kind of need to be going into it with the expectation that some things you will have to let go of. Like everything will probably not be ideal. Some things you might be able to keep close to ideal. So who knows, maybe you can actually get in all the volume that you want for all your muscle groups. It's not likely, to be perfectly honest with you, but who knows, maybe you can even arrange that. But you might have to make some concessions elsewhere. So for example, what I'm very confident that it's not going to happen is that you get in all the volume while getting in all the rest periods, right? So short rest periods on compound lifts, for example, are generally not recommended. But I mean, if you have, let's say, an hour and a half to train and you need to get in 30 sets in total for that whole workout, the 30 sets, that's a lot of sets. You're not gonna be resting 3 minutes between sets, because, you know, do the math, in 1.5 hours, that's not going to happen. Another example would be these intensity techniques like rest pause training, myo reps, these things. The general kind of consensus in the industry, and that's definitely what I follow as well, that on single joint lifts, you know, curls, tricep extensions, lateral raises, it can be fine. It's a good time saver. If you're really serious about growing your arms as big as possible, I would probably not recommend you to use that as your default training approach, simply because we don't know confidently enough how well that's going to work in the long term. But, you know, if you need to use some kind of an exercise for that, or if you need to use it on some kind of an exercise, use it on these single joint lifts. Well, I would say that if you really are limited on time and you really want to cram in as much work as possible, which I think is a good mindset, then I would say, you know, use it on even like chest press movements and compound pulling movements, and hell, even on like hack squats or whatever, because, you know, what's going to be better? Getting in a decent amount of time under load, so to speak, or to adhere to the general recommendations on rest periods and what to use rest pause training on and not get in your volume? Well, I would say that it's an easy decision because probably still getting in enough work at a high enough effort level is going to be superior or more important than, you know, adhering to something like rest periods. On the theme of overlap still, so I mentioned that you want to get at least a surface level understanding of muscle functional anatomy, and that based on that, you will understand the overlap between different exercises and muscle groups. So on that topic, here I would say you also want to use some kind of categorization based on priority. So those muscle groups that are the most important to you, I would say that you want to be very, very conservative with how you're considering overlap. So again, if my chest is the most important to me, it's not, by the way, but it used to be, then I would definitely not be considering any kind of overlap there. So if I'm doing a barbell overhead press, I'm not going to be considering that an upper pec builder, even though technically it probably is, but it's just not good enough. I'm going to be doing all the chest volume that I can and like still be safe. I'm not going to be counting these things. Also not going to be counting a lat prayer or some kind of a straight arm pull down. Yes, it probably hits the pecs to some extent, but it's not going to be good enough for me at that time. On muscle groups that are important-ish, but not priority number one, you want to be considering overlap, but you want to be conservative with it. So for example, my triceps, if that's something that it is important, but there are definitely other things that are more important, then I'm going to be counting compound presses as a tricep builder, but I'm going to be very conservative. So if I do, let's say, a total of 10 barbell presses of various kinds over the course of the week, I'm going to be counting that as maybe 2 tricep sets. Maybe I could be counting it as half, and I think that would also be reasonable, but I'm going to be ultra conservative because I really don't want to be missing out. If it's even less important and I just don't enjoy training it, then I'm going to be more generous with how I'm counting that overlap. And you can sort of pick and choose this because there is no exact science on this. You can be more generous, but just don't be wishful. So for example, I think it's reasonable, as I said, to count a bench press as half a set for the triceps. That's borderline because of the shoulder extension, but you know what, or the shoulder flexion. But for example, a chin up. Is it reasonable to count it as half a set for the biceps? I would say yes. However, but to go back to the previous chest example, would it be reasonable to count a wide grip pull down as even half a set for my chest if that was something that I really didn't enjoy training? No, I don't think it would be, because it's going to be minuscule stimulus for the chest. So don't be wishful, but at the same time, be daring enough to actually count the overlap, because it would also be foolish to not count it at all. You can decide to not count it, but to just say that no, for example, a wide grip pull down does not hit the biceps. I mean, that's just wrong, because it does. It might not hit it a lot, but you would definitely notice a difference in, like, if you did, I don't know, 20 sets of wide grip pull downs up until that point a week, and you did a whole bunch of arm work, if you all of a sudden took out the 20 sets of wide grip pull downs, something would change as far as your biceps are concerned, if you didn't replace it with anything else. So, you know, have different categories. And then, as I said, like if something is something that you really don't care about and you're even justified, then either skip it or just experiment with what you can get away with and how little you can actually train it. Two final things, because I think slowly I will want to wrap this video up. I'm going to be talking about this topic later. Please give me some feedback, like what other aspects of this would you want me to cover? But two more things. First thing is, if possible, try to shoot for at least 3 days a week. Now, if it's not doable, then it's not doable. But if it's possible, but like, okay, like I'm Mr. Minimalist, so 2 days a week should be good enough because it's cool, but I could also train 3 days a week. Try at least 3, because you can just fit in so much more stuff. With 2 days a week, like you really, you will need to cut back on a lot of things, and it's only like 1 or 2 muscle groups that you can like really train full on, even at a maintenance dose. If you want to be training most of your muscle groups, then you really will be limited to 1 or 2 muscle groups that you will even be able to do, like, I don't know, 10 sets or something like that. Another thing to keep in mind, okay, then it's more than just 2 points, is that when you're training only 2 or 3 days of the week, and once again, I'm writing about this in my book, you need to be a lot less conservative, most probably, with how many like really fatiguing lifts you cram into a single session. So if you train 6 days of the week, then I would really, really think twice or even three or 10 times about putting squats and deadlifts into the same session, because I mean, that's going to wreck you. If you're going to train the next day, then yeah, I mean, it could be rough. But if you don't train for another 4 days, I mean, hell, I mean, go murder yourself. You're going to have time to like resurrect yourself and come off. Well, anyway, I'm not going to be making Jesus analogies here, but yeah, so like you're going to be fine, most probably. Last point I will make is, of course, like I said, there are legitimately people who don't have time, who can only go, let's say, two times a week, but always question yourself. Like we can become so much more efficient with our use of time. Like much of the time limitation that we perceive that we have is actually just the function of us using our times in really, really crappily inefficient ways. So it could very well be that actually it would be a lot more time efficient and even energy efficient for you to be in the gym 5 or 6 days of the week for short sessions than to go there for two balls out sessions. It could definitely be that it's not the case. And in practice, oftentimes, indeed, it's more time efficient to be only there 3 days a week, because people don't just lose time usually by going to the gym, but they also lose time by the post-workout meal and the pre-workout meal and the ritual before and dancing in front of the mirror at home and saying like, hey, are you talking to me? And chatting with people in the changing room and whatever. So like, if you cannot save time on these things and you cannot be efficient with these things, then yeah, like being in the gym 6 days of the week will mean a lot of lost time. So yeah, consider these things. Always question what's truly the best option here. Like, is this really the only option, or am I just insisting on a narrative that I made up? So yeah, that would be the last thing I will say. Otherwise, please let me know what you thought of this video. Like I said, I will definitely be covering minimalist training as a topic in the future as well. And if you want to be working together with me one-on-one, or want to do a consultation with me, ssdable.com, submit the application form. I'll get back to you. We'll talk over if we would be a good fit or not. Otherwise, that was it for today. Hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you in the next video.